Welcome to the Doctor's Life Podcast with Diane Ansari Wynn, MD. Dr. Diane is a stress and burnout coach for doctors. With her 15 years of experience as an anesthesiologist and certification as a physician development coach, Dr. Diane coaches doctors on how to live a rich life of purpose, fulfillment, freedom, and happiness both at work and at home. In this podcast, Dr. Diane brings together doctors and researchers that are experts in health, wellness, stress, and burnout, as well as doctors that have been successful in clinical practice, academics, non-clinical careers, and business to share their expertise and life experience so that you can live your own life purpose, fulfillment, freedom, and happiness. To get free access to a PDF and video of easy and proven strategies that melt stress away and keep it away, simply register at www.dianeansari-win.com. That's www.dianeansari-win.com. Now here is your host, Dr. Diane Ansari Wynn.
Hi, it's Dr. Diane here, and I have a quick request before we jump into the show. If you like this podcast, it would mean so much if you took just a moment to hop over to iTunes, write a review, and rate the show. That is how other people will find the show and get the same great value from it that I hope that you're getting. It just takes a few moments to click a star rating and write a quick note. Now, on to the show. Everybody, it's Dr. Ansari Wynn. Welcome to another episode of the Doctor's Life Podcast. Today we are talking about being financially intelligent. I have a fantastic guest with me today, Dr. David Norris, who wrote a book entitled The Financially Intelligent Physician, What They Didn't Teach You in Medical School, and that was just released in March of 2017, March of this year. Dr. Norris is a fellow anesthesiologist. He's been in private practice since 2004. And what he found was he was serving in leadership positions for his practice and realized that he would best serve his practice if he got his MBA. And it was during that business school experience that Dr. Norris discovered his real passion, which is to help others improve their business intelligence and become stronger leaders through education. He has formed a training and consulting company and called the Center for Professional Business Development. And he created that with two like-minded friends of his, and they have a whole cadre of experts that work with academic departments and medical societies to improve physicians' knowledge in finance, negotiations, communication, legal issues, and leadership. And he also coaches healthcare providers in a variety of negotiation and business situations. He writes columns on leadership and negotiations for physicians' practice and the American Association for Physician Leadership. As I mentioned, his first book, The Financially Intelligent Physician, What They Didn't Teach You in Medical School, was released in March of 2017. Dr. David Norris, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm really looking forward to our conversation.
Well, excellent. Thank you for having me on, Dan. I've been looking forward to this. Anytime I can help other physicians gain and improve their business intelligence, I'm all in 100% there. So I'm more than happy to be here.
As you've listened to the podcast before, and those of you who listen to the podcast regularly, you know that we start off by asking our guests how they decided to become a physician and their journey to where they are right now. And Dr. Norris is no exception. So, David, we'd love to hear your story about how you got into medicine and how you got where you are today.
I had always been interested in medicine. I had been hospitalized or seen the hospital a couple times growing up. I found it fascinating. And I always enjoyed the atmosphere when you walk into a hospital. Some people don't. I did. And I enjoyed the science behind it and the very specialized skill sets that you gain. You know, being an expert in the field really appealed to me, and being able to affect change in people's lives. So I originally went to Kansas State, got my bachelor's in science and biology, and then went on to KU Med, where I got my medical degree. I spent 2 years in Kansas City and then spent 2 years in the clinical campus in Wichita, Kansas. Originally, I went to med school thinking I wanted to be a general surgeon. And then I got into internship and decided, no, I don't want to be a surgeon. Because at the end of my fourth year, after we'd already matched, I did my anesthesia rotation. I was like, whoa, this is kind of cool. I enjoy this.
Agreed. And it is kind of cool.
It tended to fit a little more with patient experiences I had had in undergrad. Because in undergrad, I worked as a phlebotomist. That's how I paid for undergrad. I was a phlebotomist at my hometown hospital. And I'd go back every weekend, work Friday, Saturday, Sunday, drawing blood from inpatients and outpatients. And I really kind of enjoyed that, and I liked that encounter, going in, doing a specific job, you know, being friendly, you know, making a connection, and then coming back later if need be. Wound up going to Vandy for 3 years of residency. Absolutely loved it. It was a fabulous medical center. It was one of the most enjoyable experiences. And then I came back and joined a practice back home here in Kansas. After about 5-6 months in private practice, so I called Robert up one day and said, you know what you told me 6 months ago? You were right. Can I come back? I said, yeah, come on back. So did a year-long fellowship in CT anesthesia and then came back to Wichita, and we slowly have built from a team of 3 to a team of 6 now, doing specialized CV anesthesia cases here. So I enjoy doing them. They're very challenging. Patients are super sick, and it's really nice when you go by a few days later and they're on the floor and they look 100 times better. And you can say, I was part of that, you know, something more tangible.
How did you find yourself becoming interested in the financial side of medicine?
My group is kind of the squeaky wheel gets the job. If you keep saying you have a lot of good ideas, well, then here you go, put up or shut up. And I took the job very seriously. I was elected to positions of leadership, and I took those very seriously. And I began to get income statements and balance sheets handed to me. And then we're getting operational reports, and we're trying to determine, you know, where to spend money. Do we hire somebody? Do we let somebody go? You know, how do we forecast for the future? How do we make these financial decisions, which are really business decisions? And, I mean, I had some knowledge of how to read income statements and balance sheets, but I didn't understand everything on the line item. I didn't understand how some of the things related to each other. I tried educating myself at first, but I started trying to get a bunch of books, and there's some good books out there, but they just weren't giving me what I wanted. And then I was having a hard time getting the time to sit down and do it. I decided I need a formal education or somebody to sit down there and say, here, learn this, and then I'm going to test you to make certain you know it. Because that was the other thing, is I wanted the validation that I did understand what I was reading and was applying it correctly. So I went back to and got my MBA, and for every Saturday for 2 years, I was back in the seat in a classroom. You couldn't skip. It wasn't like med school where you could get note service and just go camp out in the library all day, right?
I never used note service.
In the business school, they wouldn't let me do that, and that's fine. And I was in there with a bunch of other executives, other people from other industries. You know, I had aviation industry. We had service industries. We had government agencies. We had all sorts of folks in this cohort. So it was interesting to kind of interact with other business leaders in other industries, pick their brains, how they've solved problems similar to the ones that I was facing or will face, and kind of give you the leg up. And besides my fellowship, it was probably the most enjoyable educational experience I had personally, because I had 60, 70-some families depending on the financial decisions I made. And if I made the wrong one, you know, people could lose a job, or the whole group could collapse or something. And that made me very nervous. I took it very seriously.
You took it very
seriously. Back and got the education. And then through that, one of the things was a stats class, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, statistics. For that project, I made up a survey. And I sent a survey out to every physician in the county or the area, the couple counties that we surround. It was over 1,000 surveys I sent, mailed out. And I got back 33, 34, 35%, something like that, response rate, an overwhelming response. I was actually surprised. I was hoping for 10% on a one-time mailing, because it was a big paper multi-sheet thing with a self-addressed stamp envelope. But in that survey, I asked them about their business intelligence. I asked, how, where would you rank yourself 1 to 10 on your leadership and your leadership training and your financial education, financial intelligence, your negotiations, your process improvement, you know, marketing? Where do you feel you're weak in? Where do you feel you're strong in? And then I asked some pointed questions like, do you know how much you make every month? Do you know what your costs are every month? Do you know the difference between a variable and a fixed cost? Do you know how the income statement balance sheet are intertwined and related? You know, how much cash you guys have in the bank right now? And then it was interesting because you get some physicians who knew yes to all those, and you know, I had others who didn't know any of that. And then I went on and asked some personal finance questions in that survey. I asked, do you know how much money you have in your checking account? Who balances your checking account every month? Does anybody balance your checking account every month? Do you know what your assets are? Do you know what your liabilities are right now? Do you know how to calculate your net worth? Because I wanted to see if there was a little bit of a correlation between the answers that they knew for their private life, if they differed for their practice.
Right,
end.
Right.
That was out of curiosity for me. I wanted to see if there was a correlation. And there actually was a pretty strong correlation between those two. So if you didn't understand finance or money in your business side, you don't understand it in your private life. It struck me one day, my wife and I, when we were out looking for houses, realtor flat out asked me, she goes, how come so many doctors can't come up with a down payment on these homes? Like,
yes.
Really? I mean, I didn't know that. She's like, oh, yeah, I got doctors that look at these homes like this all the time, and they can't bring any money to the table.
Oh, yeah. We don't save money. Not all of us do. That's really telling. We're great at making money. Managing it, whole nother story. And that's where you come in.
Yeah. So the way I started with a hypothesis that if I can improve your business intelligence, if I can change your mindset, because, you know, our mindset, if you look at the definition of mindset, it's your attitude about something.
Mm-hmm.
And when I used to work with my mentor on, and we'd go out and do negotiation workshops. And my topic was mindset that he first assigned to me to teach. If you look up the definition of mindset, it says it's your attitude about something. When I first read that, I was like, I know what an attitude is because I can spot a bad attitude pretty easily in my or employee or coworker. That's pretty easy. And I was like, No. I don't really like that. What's the definition of an attitude? And your attitude is the way you think and feel. So your mindset's nothing more than the way you think or feel about any given person, place, situation. And so what I want to do is if I can begin to change their mindset, the way they think and feel about money, about how to run a practice, those will then spill over into their private life. Because usually what happens is, I could wear a bunch of different hats in life. I have a dad hat. I have a husband hat. I have a volunteer hat. I have a physician hat. I have a manager hat. You know, I sit on committee members' hats. You know, some hats are, I want to be on this committee, and other hats are like, how do I get off of this committee at the hospital? But, you know, I sit on a lot of different things. But the one thing, even though I'm changing hats all day long, I never change my glasses. So I tend to see problems the way I tend to see problems. And those glasses really are my mindset. So what I'm trying to do is to change those prescription lenses of those physicians, other healthcare providers, change their mindset, the way they view business and money, and hopefully it will spill over into other areas of their life and make them more effective leaders, ultimately, is the goal.
Exactly. So if I'm picking up what some doctors in the audience might be thinking at this point, when you were talking about balance sheets and costs, fixed costs and firing people and hiring people and all that stuff, it can start to feel kind of overwhelming. I remember when I was on the board of directors of my anesthesiology practice, we used to meet regularly with our accountants. Actually, the whole group would meet with the accountant firm, and then we'd have separate meetings with them as well, depending on what we were doing. If we're at one point we were looking to merge with another practice, so we were looking at the financial viability of doing that. I recall that when I first started in those meetings with the accountants and then on the board of directors as well, that it really just sounded like a lot of talking that I didn't understand and flipping through spreadsheet and just trying to keep up in those meetings. And you know, little by little you start to understand it, but it's just a completely different world than the world that we're used to living in, which is our medical world and, as you said, maybe our working with our own personal finances. So it can sound very confusing, and your book brilliantly goes through what doctors need to understand. If you wouldn't mind just going through a few things, what is it that doctors should know, kind of like business 101, and they can look in your book and find other resources, contact you to learn more. What is it that doctors should know about the business side of their practice so they can at least start learning kind of what you need to know? Like sometimes you don't even know what you need to know.
Science is important. And to understand how financially healthy your practice is critical. And I think you'd need to start with understanding the basics, and that would be what's on a balance sheet and what's on the income statement. Most physicians, I know some who never look at their balance sheet. Big mistake. Your balance sheet and your income statement are tied together. You make a change on your balance sheet, it will probably be reflected somewhere on the income statement. And then some docs never look at that report, and they only look at the income statement, and they look at the bottom line. You know, it's nice to know how much money you made, I understand, but the meat and the problems exist above the line. And you got to know where your money's coming from on the income side, your revenue side. What am I charging for? Who are my payers? Who's paying me the best? Who's paying me the worst? Are there any service lines that I may be offering that they're not as profitable as I would like them to be? And then you go into the costs. You know, where are my costs? How do I track my costs? How do I understand how my costs relate to productivity? And if I have a busy month, does that mesh with my costs? When will I expect to see that bump in revenue from that busy month? And that really depends upon the type of accounting system you use. Some accounting systems, if you're using accrual or using cash basis. And it's very important to understand whether or not you're looking at a cash basis report or an accrual report. Because if you're using cash basis reporting, then when money goes out or comes into your practice, you record it. So most of us don't, I don't know, I think with the average days in AR, the average days in accounts receivable, how long it takes you to get your money from the payer after you see the patient submit your bill. Ours personally is about 45 days. But my employees that did the work, they don't want to wait 45 days. They want
to
be paid every 2 weeks. In order for you to really understand and get a good picture of your cash flow, money coming in, and how do you manage all that, you need to first start with, is this a cash basis or an accrual basis? And then from there, you can get a better idea of how your money is going to flow. So we do, our revenues get bumped up in January and February and then into March. But our productivity and our costs go down those months because nobody wants surgery because all their deductibles reset. After
right.
Thanksgiving, it's crazy. It's gangbusters. Everybody wants their surgery. And, you know, you're running full rooms 24/7 almost, it seems. So you got a lot of costs there, but you're not going to get that revenue for a few months. And then you'll see it spill over to the next year, and then you're like, oh, well, we're flush with cash. First quarter, we made all this money, and then it catches up. But if you understand that and you can plan for that and budget for that, then I think you'll be better off. Understanding the terms that accountants use, what I call accountantese, we in the medical field, right, I mean, we have lateral and medial, anterior, posterior, cephaloid, caudate, because it gives us a relationship. And if we, or, you know, we have specific words like osteosarcoma. You say words like that, we immediately know what you're talking about. In accounting, it's the same thing. And if you want to have an effective, efficient conversation with your accountant, learn to speak their language. If you want to have an effective and cost-effective conversation with a payer, learn to speak their language. What I've noticed is a lot of physicians, we're smart people. We are. And that's fine. But we're not smart in everything. And some of us have a hard time admitting that. We're not smart in everything. We have a hard time saying, I don't know. Because we just don't want that. We just don't want to admit it to ourselves, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But the sooner you say, I don't know, and you begin to educate yourself, you'll be well on your way to getting the type of practice that you really want out of your practice by admitting what you don't know. Other things I think physicians need to know about finances is they need to realize that you need to track these things on a monthly or periodic basis, okay? You need to look and see January, how'd we do? February, how'd we do? March, how'd we do? You know, and compare that with your productivity numbers, whether it's cases seen, appointments seen, blood draws, x-rays taken, whatever. And then you look at that on a monthly scale, a quarterly scale, an annual scale, and you look back and say, what changes are we seeing? If something's trending up, why? Did we do something different? And if something's trending down, why? Did we change something? Or do we need to change something? If you only look at the bottom line, you're never going to really dig into those numbers. And you know, I've known a number of physicians who never looked at that balance statement, and they kept making the same amount of money until they went bankrupt because they kept borrowing their salary rather than earning the salary because they weren't keeping track of it. And their accountant wasn't that great. And, oh, here's my favorite professor in accounting and business school, CPA,
mm-hmm.
used to be a CFO for a couple different hospitals. You know, he said, a CPA is a certified public accountant, that just means they've passed the test and they're certified to be an accountant. It doesn't mean what they give you certified. So he said, always ask for more. Ask for explanations as to things. If you don't understand some, ask them. And if they can't give you the answer, keep asking until you get what you want. If they don't give you what you want, get a different accountant. He was adamant about that. And I remember one time I was in a meeting with some of our accountants, and our accountant changed. The company we were using changed. You know, the accountant that had been handling our account left the company, and we got assigned a new one. And this accountant decided to start reclassifying some expense. Okay, so on the income statement balance sheet, if you're looking at what we call horizontal comparison, mm-hmm. you're going period to period to period, and you're looking at the differences.
Right.
Began to change some line items so that you would have to really think about. You'd have to ask, well, where did you reclassify this from? Because what you know, like it used to be line A is now reclassified into line C and line D. At one point she did. I can't track costs if you keep changing things. I don't mind you changing, but number one, tell me you're going to change them. We have a conversation as to why you want to change them, and if I agree, then we can do it. And two, I want to be able to track these costs over time, because if you keep mucking around with my line items, I have a harder time tracking. And she didn't like it, but I said, and that's how accountants steal from you.
You know?
Yeah. But it got the point across that I understand what's going on here, and mm-hmm. I mean, I'm not saying that, but I'm not some Joe Schmo. Let's take this seriously.
Right.
I'm not your typical client. And I think, and then we had very focused, productive conversation. I think if a physician can get to that point, they're going to be worlds ahead of competition or even, you know, in their own life.
Yeah, it's like having a basic competency in mm-hmm. finances mm-hmm. so that you can hire and work with the best consultant that you can, which in this case is your accountant. How do doctors overcome the hurdle of thinking that money is something that they shouldn't get involved with because it's kind of base, or that, you know, because mm-hmm. because medicine's kind of a noble profession.
Right. How do you,
like getting involved
how can
with
you,
money is
yeah.
not like a good, it's a dirty business. So the money mm-hmm. of the money part is a dirty business somehow. So
right.
I wanted
and
you to speak to that.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And I, you know, because that was one of the things I got frustrated with in med school is I began to ask questions about business because, you know, like I realize I operate in a capitalistic society and an economy. We exchange goods for services for payments and fees. So, I mean, I have to have a basic understanding of this if I want to put food on the table for not only myself and my family, but those that I employ or that work with me, if I'm employed as a physician in a larger organization. But every time I'd ask that, I was like, oh, no, Dr. Norris. You were, at the time, it would have been med student Norris. But you're not supposed to ask those sort of questions because we're a noble profession. And then when I got to residency, they're like, ah, you'll learn it in residency or when you get out. And I was like, then I didn't learn it. So, but I think what you have to realize is that money is nothing more than a tool. All right, these financial reports show you, they really show you the fruits of your labor. They show you the fruits of the decisions you make. One of the things we use when we do a process improvement, operations improvement, One part is, you know, efficiency ratings, you know, like how many minutes does it take you to see a patient or get a patient checked into the room, that sort of stuff. Coupled with that is the financial metrics that go along with that. Almost every time we do a process improvement, we attach financial metrics. And we do that because that's another method and another metric that we can use to see how good or bad of decisions we make. And how much money you have at the end of the day is based upon how good or bad a decision you make. And I think the sooner physicians begin to realize that money's a tool and it's not the end all, but it is a tool that allows us to continue to keep those doors open to serve our patients. So earlier this week, I went over to one of the federally qualified health centers in the city.
Mm-hmm.
And one of my friends working there wanted me to meet with her CEO, and we began to talk about this stuff, and the CEO, very passionate, I was impressed with her. I mean, she was dedicated. She knew her mission and purpose. She wants to serve people in that surrounding area. She wants to take care of people who can't afford to necessarily go to the big centers and who may not even have insurance, you know, and she's passionate about making certain that if you come in to her clinic that they give you a behavioral health assessment. You know, they also have dental care there on board with you if you need it, and medical care.
Mm-hmm.
But she kept going back to the finances, and she kept saying, you know, she didn't apologize for it. You know, she was talking about how much revenue they have, and at the end of the year, you know, they're in the black, but just a little bit, but that's okay. But she says, I still need to understand this stuff. I still have to be able to perform this way, otherwise I can't help anybody. I can't.
Right.
If I disappear, these 4,500 families that we take care of aren't going to be able to get care other places in the city. Some of the people they take care of are immigrants, and so they're not eligible for any kind of federal health care, right? You know, Medicare and Medicaid, because they're not U.S. citizens. So, but they provide those services, and that's their mission. That's their calling. And I think if you can begin to realize that you're there for a bigger purpose, you're not there for the money. You're there to help and serve others. And earning a profit isn't bad. It's a necessity so that you have the capital to reinvest in people, hire better people, more people, reinvest in new capital structures, whether you need to expand like this one. They've just built a 40-square-foot building that they're building right now. It'll be done in a couple months. Mm-hmm. They're expanding those services so they can serve more people in the underserved areas. But they couldn't do that if they were operating in the red. So they take that very seriously, and they wanted their physicians to begin to think about, don't always think about how much is this going to cost, but what's the most effective thing, and I need to, you know, make certain that I don't waste if I can avoid it. I think as soon as you begin to say, it's a tool that gets me to the end, it's a means to the end, and the end is taking care of people, whether, you know, all kinds of people. And if you can do that, you get over that, then seeing that money is nothing more than that tool, it becomes very easy to make those decisions, I think. And that's how I approach it. You know, she has physicians on staff. They pay a competitive salary, and some of them she gives 2 months off, and they go off to mission field, and they do missions work in other countries. But that's in line with their mission statement and their purpose. But they couldn't do it if they didn't manage the income, they didn't manage the expenses, they didn't watch the balance sheet, and they didn't plan for it. And that's the other thing. You got to have a plan. If you don't have a plan, you're not going to go anywhere. You know, when we went on family vacation, we planned to go to these places because we wanted to get there, and then we took the steps to get there. If you don't have a plan, then, yeah, you probably will wind up not accomplishing your full potential. So, yeah, have a plan is the other thing. Don't view money as a bad thing. Money's not evil. It can be a very powerful tool that can help a lot of people. And it's okay to be compensated for your expertise. My auto mechanic or my plumber or the guy that just replaced my AC, they charge me quite a bit an hour, but they have specialized knowledge and skills that I don't have. We have specialized knowledge and skills that others don't have. So just recognize that. And until the capitalistic socioeconomic state we live in disappears, that'll always be that way. Just get over it.
Hey, you're giving it to us straight, and that's how we like it, doctors. We don't like people pussyfooting around. Tell us more about your book. It's really unique and comprehensive, and I encourage everyone to get a copy of it. Again, it's The Financially Intelligent Physician, What They Didn't Teach You in Medical School, and I know it's available on Amazon. Why don't you go ahead and tell us a little bit more about the the book?
Sure. The book was a labor of love. Now, this is the very first book that I'd ever written, and it was one of those things where I went back to that survey I did, and accounting and finance was number one on the list of what doctors feel most uncomfortable with. And I said, well, there's a need. I understand this stuff fairly well. I'm not a CPA, but I understand it, and I try to make things as simple as possible. And I try to, you know, I hate business speak. And I usually, when I talk to patients, I try never to use Latin or Greek.
Yeah, right.
Unless it is,
right.
You know, unless it is the humerus. Your humerus is broken. It's your upper bone. It's broke, you know, because I want to communicate effectively. So, and I wanted a desk reference, something that I could read and say, aha, this makes sense. And then if I ever have questions, I could go back to, you know, serve as an educational resource and a reference book. It took me, a little over 18 months to go through and write. A lot of revisions, a lot of editing, a lot of rearranging, throwing stuff out, adding stuff. The financial reports that you see in this book, a good friend of mine is a family practice physician here in town. And so I asked him for his financials. I asked him to scrub them, clean them, you know, and he and his office manager and I, we scrubbed the numbers so you couldn't identify who they were. But I also got the operational data with it. The examples I use are what physicians are handed on a real daily basis. And this was a family practice clinic, and they have their own lab and radiology and pharmacy and stuff. So I tried to make it as realistic as possible using real-world examples, not some pie, you know, like some theory. And that took a long time to recreate a lot of the tables and stuff. I wanted you to begin to understand how a lot of this works. So I start the book off. I walk you through how to read an income statement balance sheet. And then I walk you through ratios. You know, how do you tell how healthy your practice is? Well, there are a couple ratios you can use. You know, we have the ankle brachial index, you know, for peripheral vascular disease. You know, and we have other ratios we use in healthcare. And we have other metrics we trend in healthcare, like hemoglobin A1Cs and stuff like that. So we're used to that, but we just got to get used to tracking it in the finance. So I walk you through, how do you tell how financially liquid your company is? How do I tell how well you're using your asset? How well are you using your people and your assets? How well, what's your profitability sort of stuff? And I just gave some of the basic ratios that a lot of people may or may not want to use. Some of them I don't use, but I think they're important to include. And I think they're important to include for the reason I put some of those in was I get phone calls from people, hey, doctor, we got this great opportunity for you. You want to invest? You know, we got this great widget.
Oh, yes.
And you know, we're
gonna
you give us $50,000, doctor, and we're gonna make off so much money with this, right? And I've had some friends that have done that and not done so well. You know, and the other day I had one and I said, that's great. All right, what I need to see is I need to see income statements, balance sheets, and cash flow statements for the last 18 months. I need to see your productivity reports. I need to see how many widgets you've sold, your cost per widget. You know, I need to see your trends before I'll give you any money. And they're like, whoa, 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 whoa. You might not be the kind of investor we're looking for. I'm like, yeah, probably not.
Oh, they don't want the savvy investor.
Well, yeah, that was the other reason. So that's why I threw some of those in there, is if you ever get involved, say you're going to buy into a freestanding surgical center or you're buying into a practice, you have more tools available to you to actually ascertain the true value of that company and how well that company is being managed before you buy in, and you gain equity in there. Okay, so that was another reason why I put a lot of those ratios in there. It was just to kind of make you a well-rounded investor, or give you the basis that you can become that. And then I talk about the types of costs. I talk a little bit about managerial cost accounting, which is how you track costs. They're fixed costs, variable costs. Most people, doctors, don't know how to do that. And I give you a little primer on break-even. How do you calculate your break-even point? I give you a couple different methods there. It's important if you want to expand and grow. That way you and your office manager or whoever you've delegated can have a meaningful conversation. And then towards the end of the book, I talk about investing or capital expenditures. Net present time value of money is what I talk about.
Mm-hmm.
Net present value, future value, present value, how to do some of those calculations. They're not hard. And I try to give you an understanding of how you can begin to use those, particularly if you're going to invest in your private life as well, payback period and stuff like that. Then I walk you through some scenarios at the end of the book, how to apply what I talk about in the book. Because having it one, you know, being told to use one thing, but actually showing you kind of how to you might use it in real life, I find really beneficial. And this is the first book in a series that we're doing. The second book we're working on right now, process improvement. We're taking the process improvement system that Chad and I developed over the last 2 years that he actually has begun to implement in the aviation world, and we're writing a book on how to implement that in healthcare and make process improvement easier and not as complicated as some want to make it. So, because we believe in keep it simple.
Right. We like it that way too. So
Well,
we're looking forward to your next book. In the meantime, I can't make it clear enough that any doc that's listening to this, or any office manager, nurse, this is something that you need to pick up and that you need to know. Dr. Norris has put a lot of vital information into this amazing book. And I'm so happy to have been able to talk with you today, David. It has been a real pleasure. And,
great.
What a great interview. I've had such a great time.
I appreciate you having me on. I do have, if you want, if your audience, they want my 8-page white paper on how to create a dashboard and what you should be checking every month, you know, what you should do on a monthly basis. They can get that free from me.
Okay.
All they have to do is if they text TFIP, it's the abbreviations for the Financially Intelligent Physician, TFIP 2017, and they text that number to 44222. They text that code to 44222, TFIP 2017. They will automatically be sent a link where they can download that free report and give them a primer and give them an idea kind of what's in the book. And if they like that even more, they can sign up and for my newsletter and get a 25% discount on my book. And if they don't want to do that, well, then book's available at Barnes & Noble and Amazon, hardback, paperback, and Kindle.
Fantastic. Well, again, David, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today.
Yes, I enjoyed it.
What's your web address again? It's
www.davidnorrismdmba.com.
Good deal.
davidnorrismdmba.com.
Perfect. All right.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, I'm so glad you all listened to this podcast, and I hope you share it with everyone that you practice with. Super vital information that is hard to find, and you found it right here on the Doctor's Life podcast. So until next time, I hope everybody stays happy and healthy, and we'll look forward to having you tune in to the next episode. You guys take care.
You've been listening to the Doctor's Life Podcast with Diane Ansari-Wynn, MD. Go to www.dianeansari-wynn.com to read show notes, listen to past episodes, share your comments and show ideas, and pick up your free PDF and video of easy and proven strategies that will melt your daily stress away. That's www.dianeansari-wynn.com.